Chapter 4. Lock and Key. Fabius stalked through the dimly lit corridor, followed by a gaggle of Vatborn. The huddled creatures snuffled and murmured quietly in their own tongue. That they had a language was a matter of some concern. He had not designed them to speak. He had not designed them to communicate at all. Nonetheless, they did, and had for centuries.
"Life finds a way," he murmured to himself.
A rule. Life will persist, whatever the intentions of a hostile universe. His Vatborn had defied his expectations, becoming something more than he'd intended, something greater. That alone would have been enough to convince him of the rightness of his path. Whatever happened, his creations would survive. The thought brought him a certain comfort. One of the Vatborn gurgled a warning, and he nodded with a smile.
"Yes, I know. They've been trailing us since the last bulkhead. Wary and watchful, your cousins, as we all must be to survive in this galaxy."
He could feel the eyes of his creations on him. The corridor had once been used for the transportation of heavy cargo to the upper holds. It was larger than most, with a thick canopy of conduits, pipes and bundled wires. The hull plates bulged like the uneven walls of a canyon, casting deep spills of shadow across the deck. He noted a number of lumens that had the look of having been tampered with. The conduits above him creaked and rustled. Quiet laughter, as if that of children, drifted down. Fabius stopped and looked up. He spied small shapes clambering through the canopy, watching him with eyes that caught the light and reflected it.
"Tell her I am here, children," he said.
The shapes vanished, as if startled. He chuckled. Like the Vatborn, the first generations of his new men had been unable to propagate themselves, save by his art. But things had changed. Things were still changing. Evolution in action. Life finding its way. Holds and chambers that had been empty for centuries now echoed with the murmur of voices and the cries of infants. Over the centuries, Fabius had populated frontier worlds with his new men. Safely spinward from the core of the Imperium, hidden from the eyes of those who might do them harm. Since Paramar, he had learned a greater caution. His creations could not rule openly as they had there, not without risking everything he had worked to build. Not yet, at any rate. He came to a heavy bulkhead. It had been reinforced at some point in the recent past, likely during the recent coup. A servitor's skull was wired into a nook set above. Optic sensors clicked and whirred within the withered features. A lumen scanner occupied what remained of the mouth. Threads of sickly green light flared out, cascading over him, scanning the ident markers of his battle plate. The bulkhead groaned open a few moments later, once his identity had been safely determined. Noise washed over him as he entered the repurposed bay beyond. It had once housed gunships and fighter craft, he thought. All gone now. Instead, it had become a communal gathering place for his new men. A place of assembly for the disparate packs, where they could come without fear of the rivalries and feuds that characterized so much of their day-to-day interaction. And watching over them all, the eldest of the pack leaders.
"Igori,"
Fabius said, as the hatch cycled closed behind him.
"You live, benefactor. That is good. When you are dead, it is troublesome."
Igori crouched atop the rail of the observation deck, lined features knit in concentration. She glanced at him, one hand idly toying with her necklace of teeth.
"Is all well?"
"As well as ever," Fabius said. "I'm given to understand that you and your packs collected a fine quota of glands. Most acceptable, my dear."
He came to join her at the rail and looked down. The deck below had become the lair of his new men, or at least one pack of such. They brawled with each other or sat huddled in quiet conversation. Some sat taking care of their gear, stripping weapons or sharpening blades. One or two matched themselves against specially modified combat servitors, or saw to the skinning and dressing of something they'd caught on the lower decks. While it might once have been human, it was no more than meat now.
"They grow more skilled with every hunt," Igori said. "Soon they will not need me at all."
She sounded sad somehow. Not afraid, as might be expected, just sad.
"One of them will challenge me soon, and they will win."
She looked at him.
"Will you mourn me when I am gone, benefactor?"
Fabius hesitated. The question was unexpected, unprecedented. He found himself nodding.
"I will. But you will live on in your children and your children's children. They carry your ferocity, your strength in them, as you carry the strength I gifted to you in years past."
She nodded.
"She said you would say that."
"Who?"
"I do not know her name, only her voice and her face. She is ever-changing and unchanging, horned and hoofed like a neverborn, but not."
Fabius felt a chill.
"You have met this creature?"
"I dream of her sometimes. She calls you father."
Fabius frowned.
"And what else does she say?"
Igori tilted her head. The gesture was inhuman, alien.
"Nothing at all. We merely walk together. She shows me things. Herself, I think, as a child. You are there. You are teaching her, benefactor, as you have taught me."
"Yes."
Then more quietly,
"Yes, I taught her. But I have not seen her in many centuries, save out of the corner of my eye, or in dreams."
Melusine, his first true creation. A being born of his flesh and the bio-wombs of his design. Created even before his failed attempts to clone the Primarchs, before the false Horus. Melusine, whose very presence had so terrified Fulgrim that he had snatched her away into the Underverse. Another crime among the many that his gene-father had committed against him since they'd cast down the loyalist standards at Istvan. Whatever Melusine had been, she was not that now. She had spent too long in the Forest of the Night and changed into something he hardly recognized. The last time she had seen him, she had come bearing a warning. True to form, it had either been too late or too early. He bore her no malice for it, regardless. With Melusine, there was only ever regret. Igori looked at him.
"Perhaps we dream the same dreams, benefactor."
Fabius studied her for a moment.
"Yes, perhaps so."
He pushed all thoughts of his former creation aside and looked down at the Glandhounds.
"I will need the twins. They have the most experience with the sort of undertaking I have in mind. Save yourself."
"Then I will go."
"No."
Fabius shook his head. She frowned.
"Why?"
"Because I have commanded you thus. What other reason is needed?"
He looked at her, noting the set of her jaw and the heat in her eyes. The lioness unfettered.
"The twins,"
he said again, holding her gaze. Eventually, she looked away with a terse nod. Fabius watched her for a moment longer, and then turned away himself. A vague sense of unease permeated him, washing away the last vestiges of satisfaction. As he left the observation deck, he found Skarlagrim awaiting him.
"Arion sent me to find you. We are nearing the gateway."
The renegade glanced past Fabius, a frown on his scarred features.
"Visiting your pets, then. How is the old girl?"
Fabius looked at him.
"Why not ask her yourself?"
Skarlagrim grimaced.
"No, I think not. They bear me little love, those beasts."
"And why should they?"
"They ape their betters. You ought to have taught them their place."
Fabius laughed.
I rather thought I had.
You know what I mean.
Skarlagrim shook his head.
You know, Abaddon has ordered that they be killed on sight. It has caused some consternation among those who value their talents.
Whatever Kyle Abaddon orders is of little concern to me.
Make it your concern, Skarlagrim said. Whatever is whispering into his ear has set itself against you, against us all. Soon enough it might decide that he should seek us out and put an end to us once and for all.
And how do you know this, Skarlagrim? I was under the impression you were no longer in contact with your former brothers.
I keep my ears open, and you are not the only one owed favors by the great and the powerful. You are not the only flesh-crafter in the eye, Fabius.
Fabius turned and thrust Torment's head beneath Skarlagrim's chin. The scepter throbbed in his grip, eager to unleash its energies on the apothecary. Skarlagrim froze. Fabius leaned close.
Chief Apothecary, he said.
Chief Apothecary, Skarlagrim corrected.
Fabius lowered Torment and turned away.
We are on expedition, Skarlagrim. Discipline must be maintained. But do continue, you were saying.
You have painted a target on us by your creation of those things.
You should be used to it. Come, if we are nearing the gateway, we must have key.
Skarlagrim grunted.
Another monster.
Another tool, and one a good deal more useful than yourself.
The outer observation bay was one of 100 such blisters lining the hull of the Vesalius. It was a rounded chamber, the voidward side of which was taken up by an immense series of viewports resembling the stained glass windows of a cathedral. Unlike Diomat's prison, the bay had not been badly neglected. Instead, it still somewhat resembled the officer's lounge it must have once been. That was not to say that there had not been changes over the centuries. As Fabius and Skarlagrim entered the bay, the nascent wraithbone that sheathed the walls and floor trembled as if in fear. The pearly yellow substance covered every available surface and stretched from wall to wall in thin latticework of deceptively fragile-looking strands. Strange undulations and curving shapes spilled wild from the walls or erupted from the floor, winding like roots among the half-buried conduits. Grown from samples taken from Lugonath, it had taken Fabius centuries to coax the Xenos matter to flourish, even in this somewhat limited space. Further, what growth there was had only been accomplished with the aid of a special cadre of gardeners. Several of these individuals moved to greet the newcomers, as word of their arrival shivered through the psychoplastic jungle. They came accompanied, as always, by sound, a raw, heaving cloud of feedback which scratched along the voxlink like rats scurrying through hollow walls. The wraithbone twisted into new and more unpleasant shapes about them as they came into view, its semi-solid substance running like melted wax. Their battle plate was equally warped and unnatural, more resembling a lunatic's idea of insect carapace than the functional armour it had once been. Every facet of their armour was daubed in garish colours, some of which were actively painful to Fabius's enhanced vision. Only the most extravagant patterns and hues registered with the cacophonized warped senses, and their armour had been modified accordingly. Rugo's carvings decorated the surfaces of shoulder plates, and strange flowering growths spilled down from the burst confines of gorgets and chest plates. Power cables, pneumatic pumps, and serpentine hoses hung from them like tabards. Vox relays decorated the malformed helmets of some like techno-organic crowns. One stepped forward. Heavy pipes and sonic emitters hung from armor that was a patchwork of marks and styles. The battle plate had been crudely reinforced, extra plates attached by means of some glistening, cancerous growth which pulsed in time to the slightest sound. His helmet was covered in barnacle clusters of broadcast amplifiers, and the grill resembled the jaws of a wild beast. Bloodshot eyes met Fabius's own through the shattered lenses of a mangled visor.
"Lieutenant Commander, you live again,"
the cacophony pulsed.
"Hello, Ramos. You and your brothers did not join the coup."
"Why would we? What does it matter to us who rules this ship?"
Ramos, bull of the eighth millennial, spread heavy arms, and the air churned with a roiling growl.
"Though it must be said, on the whole, we prefer you to Thalopsis. He had no ear for music, that one."
Fabius was struck by Ramos's erudition. When they'd met aboard Kasparos Telmar's flagship, Ramos had been barely able to communicate. Now it seemed he had relearned the art of conversation. The noise marine stroked the flat skull of one of the simian servants that he and his fellows had brought aboard. Void-adapted descendants of slaves taken during the Legion Wars, the ape-like creatures were singularly resistant to the auditory miasma their masters gave off. Hundreds of them inhabited the Wraithbone Grove that the noise marines now tended on Fabius's behalf. They scampered and chattered among the pale, solid foliage, shaping its pliable substance with quick gestures. Fabius watched them for a moment.
"The Wraithbone is still flourishing, I see."
"Our song aids its growth,"
Ramos said.
"It listens and learns, spreading wherever we cast our voices."
Fabius nodded, pleased. The Wraithbone was essentially solidified warp energy, and through trial and error, he had discovered that it could be manipulated by proper application of psychic force, such as the raging clamour that bled from the cacophony. Already, it was beginning to permeate the Vesalius' structure, winding through the frigate like creeper vines and spreading across the hull. The vessel didn't seem to mind the intrusion, thankfully. To the contrary, it seemed to welcome it. Somehow, in some way as yet unidentified by the few machine priests still aboard, the Wraithbone was improving the frigate's functions one by one. Then, hybrids were often stronger. Only time would tell what the Vesalius might become in a few centuries. Fabius was already considering the possibilities of a ceramite Wraithbone blend, a lighter, more reactive armor, capable of repairing itself. He pushed the thought aside before he could become lost in the possibilities.
"Has it been quiet?" he asked.
Ramos nodded.
"As the grave. It is at the grove's heart, as ever. We leave it be, and it ignores us."
"And the Wraithbone?"
Ramos hesitated.
"The Wraithbone talks to it, I think."
The noise marine sounded almost uneasy, if such a thing were possible.
"We leave it to its gardening, as you asked."
"Good. We near our destination. I will require your services when we arrive."
Fabius stepped past Ramos and made his way deeper into the tangled mass of Wraithbone. Scarlagrim, Ramos, and the others did not follow him. Even the Voidborn kept their distance. The air at the grove's heart was clear of much of the sonic distortion that characterized the rest of the bay. Instead, it was filled with the soft rustle of growing Wraithbone. Here were the circular grow units where he had overseen the implantation of the Wraithbone shards, from which it had spread across the bay. And among the humming units, a thin, alien figure sat cross-legged in a writhing field of Wraithbone fronds. Fabius extended his hand towards it in a courtly, if mocking, gesture.
"Come, Key. It is time to once again fulfill your purpose."
The lithe shape took the hand, and Fabius helped it to stand. It had been an Eldar once, a corsair of the Sunblitz Brotherhood, taken for the information it held in its narrow skull, information that had allowed Fabius to plunder the hoarded knowledge of an undeserving species. But now, the creature he'd named Key served a different purpose, one that had occupied them both for the better part of several centuries. Wraithbone grew within it, permeating the porcelain flesh, encouraged by his careful attentions. Pale thorns studded its arms and cheeks, and a single, rough, curling, horn-like extrusion sprouted from its skull and curved back over its head. Its eye sockets were occupied by thick tangles of psychoplastic, carved to resemble eyes. Old blood stained its limbs, and the wasted frame beneath the loose robes it wore, congealing about the innumerable sensor filaments that erupted from its body. As it moved, the wraithbone moved with it, thickening beneath its feet, or rose up to touch its dangling hands, though it paid no heed. Key had no mind now, or at least not in the traditional sense. Its cerebrum, like the rest of its body, had been utterly infested by wraithbone. It was a living psychic resonator, a skeleton key for opening a certain type of lock. It followed him meekly as he escorted it out of the garden. Ramos and the other cacophonai stepped aside, heads bowed, their noise levels dipping slightly as Key moved through their ranks. Skarlagrim kept his distance as they made their way to the command deck.
"They were frightened of it," he growled. "Respect, not fear. Unlike you, Ramos knows art when he sees it."
Fabius glanced at Key's blank features, free of all the hatred and pain that had once adorned them. Year by year, decade by decade, as the wraithbone spread through it, all that Key had been was stripped away. The Xenos had, like many of those who served him, been repurposed into something more useful. The command deck was awash in noise when they arrived. A ship in motion was rarely silent. Bulkheads groaned and hull plates flexed in their framework. The Gladius-class vessel was old and had a bellyful of complaints, which it manifested in a clangor of humming consoles and whining cogitators. Beneath the observation dais, the servitor crew sat hunched in their control cradles. The bulk of the Vesalius's functions were handled by the fleshy, vat-grown automatons. Fabius preferred the precision of slaved minds where possible. Those functions that could not be performed by the servitors were dealt with by members of the pale, wasted clan of mutants that were currently in control of the upper decks. Wars were fought between the subhuman clans for the right to serve on the command deck, and the pale worm folk had been in ascendancy for centuries. They were descendants of the original bridge crew, appropriately enough, and wore the faded, frayed remnants of their ancestors' uniforms with no small amount of pride. Both servitors and mutants were under the command of those few original officers whom Fabius had found worthy of augmentation. Officers such as the Strategium Overseer Wulver, who greeted Fabius and Skarlagrim as they stepped onto the observation deck.
"The Vesalius is content,"
it said, in a crackling monotone. Fabius took in the creature at a glance. Wulver was nothing less than an alembic twisted into a roughly human shape. A being of hard metal and thick glass, clad in a pristine naval uniform. A still-living brain glistened visibly within the skull, and human eyes peered out through the sockets of a brass death mask. The vox grill set between the lips of the mask pulsed again.
"The Vesalius is content."
"Good."
The symbiosis between overseer and vessel was impressive. If Wulver had any thoughts which were not shared by the Vesalius, and vice versa, Fabius had seen little evidence of it.
"Has our presence been detected?"
"Negative,"
Wulver crackled. It turned on its heel and marched back to the command throne that occupied the heart of the observation deck. Fabius followed, still leading Key. Arian, Sakara, and the others, including Savona, were already there.
"Excellent."
Fabius looked up at the profusion of display screens which flickered along the far curve of the command deck. The largest of them, a cracked and sputtering Oculus view screen the size of a fortress wall, showed a full forward outlook of their destination. The webway gate floated amid the broken fragments of a slain world. The latter was one of many planetary carcasses littering the Eye of Terror, the remnants of a fallen empire. So too was the immense edifice now silently tumbling through the Empyrean. The gateway was wider across than the Vesalius, and taller as well. It resembled an antiquated doorway, surrounded by an ornate frame that was at once decoration and defensive emplacement. It spun slowly in place, propelled by the cosmic wind. Once a nexus point of a pan-galactic empire, it was now a home to Neverborn. Demons of all sizes, shapes, and descriptions crawled across it. Countless thousands of obscene shapes, writhing, digging, squabbling among the alien perfection. He frowned, repulsed by the sight, but also pleased. Thus far, the demonic horde did not appear to have noticed the vessel sliding towards them.
"Your hexagrammatic wards are working as promised, Sakara."
"For now,"
the word-bearer said sourly. Key jerked its hand loose of Fabius's and swayed towards Sakara, carved eyes fixed on the crimson-armoured renegade. Sakara met Key's blank gaze without flinching. The former corsair's pale fingers traced the Colchisian runes that marked his battleplate, its mouth moving silently. The word-bearer endured its attentions stoically. For whatever reason, the creature seemed fascinated by him. It was as if he were a book it could not wait to begin reading anew. Fabius left Key to its studies and turned his attentions to his own. Over the course of the intervening centuries, he had begun a careful exploration of certain spurs of the webway, with Key's obliging aid. The labyrinthine dimension was littered with the detritus of a fallen culture. Most of it was altogether useless for his purposes. But some of it had value and was worth acquiring. For the past several decades, that had been his driving focus, or distraction, perhaps, gathering what he could to pore over and study. Like a carrion bird picking at the bones of a forgotten empire. The thought was not displeasing. After all, there was much that could be learned from bones, if one was observant. He watched the gateway draw closer, and his gaze slid over the multifarious, intricate carvings that covered every speck of its surface. Even this, a simple interdimensional hub, was nothing less than a work of art. Next to it, even the greatest cathedrals of Terra were nothing more than rude hovels, their stones grubbed from the earth and stacked with haphazard care. Though he doubted any cathedral had ever suffered as great a demonic infestation as this edifice did. It was always the same. Wherever there was a closed gate, you would find the Neverborn, lurking on the threshold, as mindless and as predictable as insects. And, like insects, they came in a variety of forms, each with its own purpose. Once he'd made a study of such creatures, taking several apart at the base level. They were frustratingly unique, even those with similar physiognomies.
"I will never understand your fascination with these creatures," Sakara said, stepping past Key. "Eldar are nothing more than rootless vermin, fit only as sacrifices."
"Eldari," Fabius corrected absently, still watching the demons.
"What?"
"Eldari. It's what they called themselves before their empire imploded. Or as close as the human mouth can come to shaping that particular term. A fascinating language. At the height of their culture, even the most banal conversation between equals was akin to a performance."
"A useless affectation for a useless race," Sakara said.
"Oh, I'd say they have some small use," Savona said, playing with the necklace of spirit stones she wore.
The colourful stones were mostly cracked and dull, though one or two still flickered with an inner light. She smiled, as if listening to something only she could hear, and tapped one of the stones against her lips. Sakara shook his head in disgust.
"Sibar right," he said loftily.
"Yes, and quite good at it."
Her forked tongue slid from between her lips and curled lewdly. The word-bearer looked away, his scarred features set and still. Skarlagrim laughed at the exchange.
"Why are you even here, Sakara? Come to pray for our souls?"
Sakara snorted.
"Prayer is for the faithful, which you are not."
A cruel smile spread across his face.
Doubly damned is what you are. Tell me something, turncoat. How did it feel helping the Clone Lord kill your own kin? Was the reward worth it? Truthfully, I would have done it for free. Scarlagrim's grin was a sharp slash of yellow. Do you have any idea what it's like living in a tomb among those who are all but ghosts? Walking and breathing, but ghosts all the same. My brothers were naught but broken automatons by then, trapped in dreams of the past, and held fast in those dreams by the blind gaze of a dead demigod. He took a step towards Sakara. They made pilgrimages, you know, to sit and stare at that ravaged husk, as if they might dredge some meaning from its ruined features. Every day, more and more of them. Horus was the chosen of the gods, the uncrowned king, Sakara snapped, face flushed with religious fervor. In him was the will of the primordial annihilator made manifest for all to see and glory in. Yes, glorious, right up until the point his father snuffed him from existence, as easily as you or I might crush a serf's skull. The gods stripped his divinity from him quickly enough after that. Scarlagrim bared his teeth in something that was more like a grimace than a smile. And us with him. All that we had fought for, all that we bled for, gone. He snapped his fingers. Just like that. Hardly as quick as that, Fabius said. Victory slipped through our fingers the moment Horus chose to reach into the dark, and something reached back. We sacrificed our ambitions on the altar of his hubris, and when he fell, he dragged us all down inexorably with him. And not just Horus, Fulgrim as well, and Angron, Magnus, Lorga. He looked at Sakara. The gods you worship are nothing save lies hidden behind masks of folklore and superstition. Interdimensional cancers, their mindless hunger confused for sentience by the lost and the damned.
Sakara flinched.
Speaking of which, the last time I saw that many Neverborn was aboard the Terminus Bloody Est,
Korak grumbled, gesturing to the screens.
Can't stand the blasted things myself.
He patted Paz-Uz, mussing the nest of writhing frond-like tendrils atop its head. Sakara looked down at the panting beast, and then up at its master.
So I see.
He stepped back as the creature's drool began to eat through the deck.
They haven't noticed us yet, but they will soon enough.
He shot Fabius a wary glance.
You're not planning on dropping the Geller field again, are you?
Fabius snorted.
Have no fear, Sakara. We will be doing this the old-fashioned way.
He turned to Wulver.
Roll out the guns, if you would.
Wulver nodded.
The Vesalius is happy.
Fabius smiled.
I knew it would be.
A few moments later, the frigate's weapons turret spat destructive lances of incandescent light. The light struck the vast edifice like lightning, scouring demons from their perches by the hundreds. Defensive batteries opened up a moment later as thousands of darting inhuman shapes flung themselves into the void as a billowing cloud. It wasn't a battle so much as pest control, and it was over almost as quickly as it had begun. Fabius turned to Key.
Now, quickly, before they reform, open the gate.
Key raised its hands and began to sing. There were no words to the song, nor even anything resembling a recognizable sound. Nonetheless, the wraithbone within the Vesalius resonated with the non-sound, and that resonance echoed outwards into the void. Like the tolling of some ancient bell buried deep beneath the black earth. The reverberation washed over the webway gate, and the primeval sensory apparatus within the construction awoke for the first time in millennia. Slowly, the flat sheen of the gateway began to crack. Veins of shimmering light speared through its expanse. Then, with a roar that Fabius felt in his bones, the gateway opened.
All ahead! Full!
He snapped. The Vesalius surged forward, defensive batteries still firing as the demons began to regroup. The frigate plunged through the antediluvian gateway like a scalpel into flesh. Colourless bands of lightning played across the surface of the gate as its own defensive system struggled to awareness. Fabius turned to the hololithic projection of the gateway, studying the scans they'd made of it. Experience guided his eye to a singular point, the control node for the hyperspatial nexus. He rattled off a string of coordinates, and Wolver, following procedure, directed a lance strike at the control node. With the node destroyed, the gateway would remain open until he decided it was time to destroy it. He paid little heed to the demon tide that flooded into the webway in the frigate's wake, already intent on calibrating the necessary sensor sweeps. His quarry would be close. It was just a matter of getting to it before any other scavengers. Key fell silent as the ship entered the webway, the echoes of its song drifting to the far corners of the command deck. The Vesalius slid easily through the darkness of the compromised pathway. Such was rarely the case. Most of the hyperspatial network had collapsed or been destroyed during the Aldari's fall from grace. What was left was often too small to traverse, save on foot. Luckily, such was not the case here. On the display screens, the pan-galactic expanse of navigable tunnels spread out around the ship in all possible directions. A labyrinth of scalloped coils, curving away at impossible angles, at once a thing of the materium and the warp. A sideways place, existing between what was and what should not be, spanning entire dimensions. The glowing tunnels reminded Fabius of nothing so much as an exceedingly complex network of capillaries and arteries running through some vast, unknowable corpus.
Beautiful, Fabius murmured. Look well and long. No sorrow and weep, for we shall never see such grandeur again.
It was an old quote, but apt.
Until the next time we break into the webway, Skarlagrim said. And the next, and the next, until you find some new obsession.
The Vesalius drifted on, engines at half power. There was no need for speed here. The sensor feeds from the hull flashed across the screens as the ship's cogitators calculated and recorded every aspect of its surroundings over the course of the next hour. As the numbers scrolled across the real-time hololithic projection, Fabius added them to a digital map. While there was little chance of ever discovering the full extent of the webway, he could at least make some attempt to chart those areas they had explored. Periodically, a thin lance of plasma fire carved a mark in the crumbling stratum above the ship.
"Chalk marks on a labyrinth wall," Arian said, as the afterglow of one such burst faded. "You foresee us returning here at some point?"
"No."
Fabius looked up from the cogitator feed.
"But what is the point of exploration without some mark of our passage?"
An alert flashed on his feed and he stiffened.
"Ah."
A moment later, Wolver, echoing the servitors below, said,
"Destination sighted."
Fabius turned from the hololith as the craft world crept into view. It was a leviathan of a ship, like a continent ripped free of some world's crust and twisted into an arrowhead. Its design was almost organic, as if it had been grown rather than made. Given what he knew about Wraithbone, that seemed entirely possible. As the Vesalius drew closer, docking towers became visible, surmounting the dorsal frame of the craft world. There were hundreds of the thin, needle-like protrusions rising from the vessel's back like quills. Scattered among them were blister-like defense turrets and launch bays. All dark, all silent. The craft world had been dead for centuries. According to the records Fabius had plundered in his travels, many craft worlds had launched themselves unfinished into the webway, desperately seeking to save themselves from the expanding warp rift that would become the Eye of Terror. Some had survived, despite all odds. Others, like this one, had not. He turned back to the hololith. The Vesalius' sensors had begun feeding information about the silent hulk into the system. Every craft world was different, though they all shared some similarities.
"What was it called?"
Arian asked, studying the hololith.
It doesn't matter, Fabius said dismissively. What is in a name? It is no less a treasure trove for being unidentified.
He spun the image, increasing its size.
Smaller than most, but in better condition than expected. Yes, a treasure trove indeed.
It's just another dead world in a dead universe, Skarlagrim said. How many have you plundered now, Fabius? 50? 100?
Hardly so many as that, Fabius said. In any event, 1,000 would not be enough. I'm rebuilding a base of knowledge that has not existed for eons. Knowledge far beyond anything we are familiar with. The knowledge that enabled the ancient Aldari to carve tunnels through subspace, or cage suns.
Or live forever, eh? Skarlagrim laughed. I know you, you old fiend. I know what drives you. You're nothing more than a Wampuri, scuttling from century to century.
And pray tell, what is that?
A blood-drinking demon from Chthonian folklore. There were similar legends on Barbarus and Terra as well.
Korak chuckled.
Superstitious, are we, Skarlagrim?
Merely making a point, you wheezing canker.
Skarlagrim gestured with his axe.
A blind man could see it. Oh, he boasts of his new men, his apex beasts, and how they will replace us and the mortals both. But for all his talk of dying with dignity, he has no intention of doing so. You're a hypocrite, Fabius, and I grow tired of humouring you.
You are free to leave at any time, renegade, Fabius said. As I have told you the last 3 times you've made this complaint, there are gunships in the bays. Take one. Set your own course, Skarlagrim. The universe is vast, and a wise man can find his own destiny.
Skarlagrim fell silent. Fabius smiled.
But you won't, will you?
He twitched a finger chidingly.
You never have, because you are Skarlagrim the Judas, the twice-damned, he who betrayed his lord not once, but twice, to save himself. Where would you go, Skarlagrim? What warband would have anything to do with a treacherous butcher like yourself?
Abaddon wishes his company at least,
Sakara said idly.
He has offered quite the reward for the pelt of the false son. Perhaps we should turn him over ourselves.
Try it, god-botherer, Skarlagrim snapped. I'll split your gullet and feed you to the beast that howled beneath the engines. Hide your fangs, Skarlagrim. You're safe here, as I promised all those years ago. Whatever else, I keep my promises.
Fabius turned away from the seething apothecary and back to the hololith, his hands clasped behind his back.
Besides, I may well have need of you before this is done.
He smiled.
Waste not, want not, remember?
The dead craft world drew close. No lights lit its sullen frame. No flicker of power tripped the Vesalius's senses. Then Fabius had not expected any of its systems to still be active, not after so long. He could not say with any certainty how long it had floated here, but it was a prize unlike any other. Most such husks were badly damaged or crawling with Neverborn, or worse. This one was seemingly intact. Perhaps a plague had claimed its inhabitants, or some form of mass ritual suicide, leaving the vessel itself unharmed. Fabius rotated the hololith again, studying the sensor feeds of the craft world. He identified one of the tertiary docking spires as the easiest point of access.
We'll take one of the assault landers in. Not Butcher Bird. Not after last time.
The gunship has strafed their prize, possibly out of spite, but more likely out of boredom. Like the Vesalius, it was a patchwork thing, and the infernal spirit that inhabited it was far too destructive for an operation like this.
Instead, they would take one of the several reclaimed assault landers that now occupied the lower bays. While no more pleasant than the gunship, they were at least more sedate, controlled as they were by dull-witted servitors.
"That place is cursed," Sakara said, bluntly. "I can hear the death screams of the vermin which inhabited it from here. They died even as they closed that gate behind them."
He spat, and the deck sizzled.
"Useless creatures. The galaxy is better without them."
"I'm inclined to agree," Skarlagrim said.
"Never trust the knife ears. They are lies made flesh, worse than Neverborn."
"Perhaps, but they were wise in their wickedness, and I would know what they knew. The survival of the species may depend on it."
"And yours as well, Chief Apothecary," Arian said softly.
Fabius did not reply.